Today is June 8th, 2008. My name is Lauren Zajac.
My name is Karen Sweeney.
My name is Jackie Peggy Kemper.
And we will be interviewing Tom Lemley, physician assistant. The interview will be taking place at his home in Hummelstown, Pennsylvania. This interview is to shed more light on how the American Academy of Physician Assistants was founded. Tom, please tell me about your formative years, where you were born, what your family was like, where you went to school, and how you chose your professional career.
I was born in a small town in Ohio, Salem, Ohio, and actually had been in a log cabin for 5 years. The house is a historical house, so my mother was very proud of the fact that she bought a house on her own. This was in 1947 that she bought this house, and she was very proud of that fact. But it was a log cabin, and it still is. It's still standing. The town at that time was about 10,000 people, and the first 5 years up to the kindergarten were fairly formative in that when I was 2 and a half, there was a fire in my home, and I had a year old a brother who was killed in that fire. And that sort of set the stage for the next 13 years or so in terms of moving around. We broke up home. Then, for various reasons, but I think that two young people, my mother was 18 and she got married, my dad had just gotten back from World War II in the Philippines, and he was a combat medic, and it was just a lot for them to end, and so they ended up separating several times and finally getting divorced when I was 13. I moved around Pennsylvania and New York and Ohio during that whole time, eventually moving back to the same town that I spent the first 5 years. And did the usual things in high school, played baseball, played football, chased ball, my wife. But that was foremost, that was on top of the list. And I think was probably, as I look back, the one best thing that put me on the straight and narrow was the fact that I found funny that the new kid, I was always used to being the new kid as we moved around, so it didn't bother me to, the first day of school, to walk in class. And but in this particular situation, I came from a New York school into an Ohio school, so very progressive to non-progressive, and they put me in a class behind what I should have been at. It was an algebra class, and when I walked through the classroom, I looked over to the left, and she was in the second row next to the last seat. And I winked at her, and she went like that, raised her nose in the air, and I've been chasing her ever since. So then what happened was, I graduated in 1965, and Vietnam was getting cranked up at that time. You either you've got two S to stay in school or volunteer for the military. And I had a 2S for about a month, and then I couldn't go to school because I had lost my transportation. So I volunteered for three different services, and the Air Force was the first to go.
So how did you choose the physician assistant profession?
It really chose me. I went overseas. One of my first assignments was overseas. And when I came back, I ended up here. And we left Ohio and came to New Jersey, where we, being very young, were just struggling to get started. Anyway, Mark got sick with a chronic illness, and her physicians said that they thought that I should stay in medicine because it kept me close to the big hospitals, and secondly, stay in the military because it would be very expensive to try to take care of her own medicine. So I was able to cross-train at that time. They would give you either the base of your choice if you were enlisted or the job of your choice. So I chose to do a job of my choice, and it was either 902 or 904, and I didn't know what those meant, but 4 was greater. And what it turned out to be was a laboratory technician. And so I went to that school, and while I was that school was in Shepherd Air Force Base, and then the second 9 months of the training at Keesler Air Force, And she came to join me, she got sick again. And the doctor was chief resident of the surgical team at the the medical center and the Air Force had, it was pretty big, had two different surgical teams. This fellow's name was Dr. Todd Barocas, and I nagged him to death when Paula Dunn, she was in the hospital, and almost so much that I would round with him. And I would run tests that he would want, weird tests that he would want run at night and things like that. And once he got better, he said, I've got a deal for you. He really didn't ask. He just said, I want you to go to Brown Day School. I said, yeah, right. What's a BA? And we had three. The first class of graduate, three of them had been assigned to Kiesler Air Force Base. And so we didn't even know. It was so early, so new, that the base that I was on didn't even know how to fill out the paper. They didn't even know what the paperwork was. But we had to go through command to get it accomplished. And by the time that all was done, I ended up in the 10th class. So I was sort of unconscious. But I love, excuse me, I love working with special needs, which is what I was doing. So that's a connection.
You could tell me more about your involvement, I guess, in hematology, if that was, at that point, was your main area, or what you moved on to doing as a physician assistant. And what was the primary issue and why was it important for you as far as being a physician assistant, the areas that you ended up moving around to in the profession?
My first job out of school was in internal medicine. The Air Force was losing all of their doctors. The main reason why the PA profession came on so quickly in the Air Force is because the doctors were getting out. Very program doctors, what they would call. And the internal medicine department went from five physicians to one during the time I was in training. And it just happened that the one that was remaining thought that was a pretty good idea to have me come over. So I took care of the chronic care patients, all the diabetes, hypertension, thyroid disease, anything that was chronic and stable. I would take care. And it worked out very well. First year was, first year made 2 years. We had no questions asked about the fact that a PA was working in internal medicine. Every other PA at that time, as far as I know, and we've been told, was working in general practice, primary care. In the office next to me, General Murphy Chesney worked, and he was the Surgeon General of the Air Force. I remember he got a little bit, he was a little bit afraid that we were moving forward too fast. And I remember he sent over some protocols. First time I ever saw a protocol. And what it amounted to was a report that's put out by the blood pressure group every year. But that was the first time I saw anything like that. So anyway, I stayed in that job for about 5 years. And would still be there. I really like doing what I was doing. In the Air Force, you move frequently.
What years did that
happen? What
years
are
in that
stuff? That would be 78 to 82. I graduated in 76, you're right, 76 to about 82. Now, I had decided that it was time to leave myself, you know, being stuck in one place for a long time. After moving every 2 years, I was ready. And I thought that just going to family practice, which was something new and sounded exciting, was the key. There was no North East South Carolina before. Can't hardly beat that. So I was on my way to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, got assigned there, and I got a call from Dave Flint, and he said, well, why don't you go to Myrtle Beach? Why don't you go to Wichita Falls, Texas instead? And so instead of going to Myrtle Beach, I went to Wichita Falls, Texas. And stayed at the schoolhouse, taught for another 4 years. And really like that. The first thing I did was get a little job up at the regional hospital there, seeing some internal medicine patients, teaching, and those kind of things. From there, I left, came to Washington, D.C., to do the medical science coaching. I oversaw the career progression of, at that time, we had 450 PAs on duty. So in the BSC Corps, there are 17 different specialties that were at that. And just to give you an idea of what it was like, around the table were all these crusty colonels who had been in the military for years and years and years and years. And they put PAs in the BSC Corps. And we didn't have a rank with experience. So I was a young captain sitting in the room with 16 very experienced people. That's really has changed. And it has, I heard a rumor last week that they're even going to move the associate court chief for a full-time position down in San Antonio, which is good. That other thing. I did a clinic over at the Malcolm Grove, which was the president of Malcolm Grove. Had a general that was in charge of it. That was my primary job, was the clinic. Yeah, but I also worked at the Surgeon General's office at Boeing Air Force Base in the same.
Was that a job you applied for? Did someone say they wanted you to go ahead and do that? Or did you?
We were looking for, the Air Force was looking for a new BSC Corps chief. My name was John. Because of some of the things that I had accomplished at the school. Almost all of it involved in a Society of Air Force Physician Assistants, I think. You're an Air Force officer first and PA second. And we sort of got by making people think that that's how we thought. Although once you're a PA, you're really a PA first. And I was working in the society. We got a lot of things accomplished. Also went to a couple of service schools and put that position.
Any other issues, barriers that existed at that time? You talked about your involvement with the BSC Corps, but any other things in the military, being in the military, particularly a lot of run-ins with doctors that didn't approve of you, or any other issues that you faced that you can think of?
Not really, I don't think. I think we were generally, the doctor, I mentioned very program doctors, these were physicians who had agreed to come in on active duty for 2 years, and then they were, the last 2 years of medical school, were funded for that, they were denied that they would be active duty. And so all of the ones that I worked around, at least, were sort of miserable being in the military because they didn't like it. They were ready to, get their practice going and all these other things. Did not put up with the bureaucracy, a very mash-like attitude, got pierced, which some of the other ones made up for that, in that they developed these programs and things of that nature. But no, I think they saw us, most of the doctors saw us as relief and told me we're not doing some work and doing a good job. Now, that's real clearly there. That certainly, once the reputation was established, and we recommissioned in 1978, then it very quickly became a partnership between the doctor and the PA. Probably more so. PAs were partners in the military, I believe, sooner than they were in civil life.
How many years did you spend in the military yourself? After you left the military service, where did you go from there, and how did your PA practice go from there?
Well, I really didn't want to do administration and having worked at the Pentagon. And I didn't want to just jump back into teaching because I've been doing both. I thought that people who taught PA programs over the years were real academically inclined people. Well, there was a job opening at the University of Pittsburgh for a PA to work in interventional neuroradiology. And that sounded kind of neat. I interviewed for that job and saw what it was about. And there, the other PA that was there, she knew of one other PA in the country that was doing this job. So, because she was the only PA, she needed some relief. So I applied for that job and went for, got out of the Air Force. And I did that for 2 years.
And what year was that?
It was 90 and 92. 90 to 92, yeah. And then from there,
Do you remember, by curiosity, what the salary was at that point when you were in civilian practice?
Well, I had heard of a PA in Pennsylvania, maybe $25,000 a year, and I remember thinking to myself, what would I do with that much money? I made a deal with the chairman of the department that I would come for exactly what I was making as a major in the Air Force. that fine was $46,000. So 6 months later, he handed me a check that raised that up to what he thought PA should be making, at least in that specialty. And that put me at about $60,000. That's right. But it was sort of a strange deal because it was a private group working within an academic setting. And that didn't last long because of the ways you can hide things about each other. So I worked with them for a couple of years. And as a matter of fact, I remember clearly the day that I was interviewing, I was standing in the x-ray department. Was dark. I didn't know whether I could do that, but, you know, being dark and cold because of machinery. And the three people came through the door, and the PA that I was working with said, "Well, people, let me introduce you to three of our other PAs here." And she introduced me to Linda Sacon and Mark and Susan DeSantis. I believe Susan was there. So 2 years later, I worked with them for about 2 years, and again, need a little bit more than just, it was a lot of standing dark, cold rooms, and this wasn't my personality. So I moved to neurosurgery with Dave Bissonnette, and Mike worked. In fact, Mike took my job when I left, and I moved over there to LA, had a job. And I learned the Gamma Knife with that group. Spent 2 years, and at the end, just about the end of the 2 years, I started being recruited by Penn State, who was trying to put together a neuroscience institute. And so the reality was that those 4 years turned into a real good training residency. And I think that's not a good word for PAs anymore, but a real good residency for what they wanted me to do here. Xenon through the blood flow studies. Get the residents used to working with PAs in radiology and so on. So I came out here and did the neuro intervention until 1997. I did neurosurgery at Penn State until 2002, when I left the Penn State for several years, 2 years, 2 or 3 years, I guess. And this reason, I had gone back 2 years ago. Hematology and oncology was always my passion. I loved hematology, but there was never a niche when my time was right. And he asked me why I chose the professions I did, especially since I think that's the key to our profession. I just was having so much fun. I was like a kid in a candy store. I didn't know what to do, but I wanted to do it all. And I found out early on that you didn't really have to be a neurologist or a neurosurgeon to work in neurosurgery. You really don't have to be a professor to be a good instructor in PA. So that's what I moved to the field. I say you don't have to be good. What I mean, you don't keep getting in the door, you get the experience.
Do you think that you accomplished all that you set out to do? That's a big question. Did you have to settle for less in any situation?
No, I don't think I did. Along the line, and if I had known early on that this is what you had to do, I would have done exactly that. I couldn't have asked for a better profession. I couldn't have, to be able to grow with a profession, not only mature myself, and grow in experience medically, but also grow with as I got older. And it's almost like being in the Air Force as well. You know, the Air Force is 60 years old. I'm 60 years old. So, you know, those years, those 24 years that I was in, we grew a lot during those times. And same difference.
Have you seen sort of major changes over time to enhance or dampen the profession? Any major things that stick out in your head as far as in the American Academy of PAs or just in the profession in general? Any major issues to enhance it or dampen?
Those early years, and the years that I spent as a social court chief, those were survival years. We could have gone by twice in it. Very easily, the stroke of the pen, just as we came on board. One day I was an enlisted guy, the next day I was a lieutenant. It was just that easy, those kind of things that happen. So those years of survival, the interesting thing is I've heard a lot of people talk about conflicts that they've had with nursing staff, physicians. Never had that. In any job that I've ever had, I've never had a conflict with someone from the physician. I believe that when you get down to the ground, in the grassroots, we're all doing the same thing, trying to get the patient in, get them out. And all that sort of goes by the wayside. And I used to say that a lot, and think, which sounds like it's good for whatever, you know, until this last job that I had. And the last job was on the floor, working with a nurse practitioner who was political active as well. She and I had to learn the job pretty much at the same time. This was taking care of my transplant patients. And frankly, the first couple of months I was wondering, I thought, how am I going to ever get out of this with my skin? It's a halfway reputation. And she was breezing along, you know. And then she said to me one day, she said, it's not enough because I'm a nurse practitioner, it's because I learned this as a nurse. You know, the things that I didn't know on the floor, that's what she did for years and years. For instance, I didn't know that she could put the same medicine on the floor too because something else was running. You had to plan for two or three times all day long. I was used to walking in right in order and walking out. So I learned a tremendous amount of the job in a short time. But the one thing I did learn is when it comes down, and the point to all that was that she taught me an awful lot about how to survive in a child. And I think I could have done better if I had been there a little bit longer, but she saved the tail several times.
And that was inpatient at Hershey Medical Center? Any other recollections that haven't been covered, or any additional comments or impressions or anything that you want to add? We want people to know about you or the profession or your relationships with others in the profession, especially, you know, your relationship and your leadership with the APA.
Well, I started with the Academy as a student. I got mad at the president a year after I was a member, and I dropped my member from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma University, actually, and Tom Guykins. And I wanted to know what the Academy was doing to get my commission. And he gave me the usual rhetoric that we all heard so long. And I said, oh, well, okay, I'm not just wasting my money. Other people did it at the same time. Well, there's been four or five great presidents who came out of Oklahoma City. And the Academy was doing all it could from that point. For as long as it was established, it was trying to help, you know, to appeal to the commission. It was my money today that needed to gain some experience. So anyway, I went to this school to teach. I had two mentors there. One was by the name of Bill McGuire, and the other Larry Russell. Larry went on to become the DSC coach as well. And I was a brand new first lieutenant, and I walked through the door, and they said, oh, we're happy to have you. Please step in my office. Little did I know these guys were jokesters. Larry said, well, what is it that you're going to do for the Society of Enforced PAs and the CAP? And I hadn't been around captains and majors who were PAs. I had never worked for a PA, so I thought, what kind of thing am I going to tell these guys in school? Where do you have a need? And they said, well, it can be in this SAPO. We have a need for a newsletter editor. And the APA, we always need people to be delegates. And so that was a consultant. It was like 1981, somewhere around. So I said, sure, that didn't sound much. Newsletter editor. I ended up doing that for 5 years. I went to the House of Delegates at first one. It was in Washington, D.C., on the 13th of August. Embassy Road. I believe it was the same year that Ronald Reagan got shot up there, if I'm not mistaken. And a year later, I really fell in love with the house. I mean, from the first time I walked in, a year later, Bill McGuire had recommended me to work on what was known at that time the Publications Committee, because I did a newsletter editor, and they thought that was the answer to it. did the publications committee for several years. I'm taking over at one point as the chairman. But one of the girls who was on publications committee, actually gave me a break of getting involved in committee work, was from, guess where, Pennsylvania. She hung out with all these Pennsylvania people that I was watching anyway because I admired them so much. Bill Hunt and Steve Wilson and Dave Bessonova, Bill Duryea, they just had Pennsylvania group heads. And Chris Legler was just, you know, she really knew her stuff. She's a program director, I think, still. And it started from there. And as I say, that group, coupled with the Air Force group, coupled with the experience as a PA, were almost synchronous. And so it just, it was like autopilot, and I had blast. Never really did have much of a desire to do the big jobs in the PA, because I just thought there were better people to do those kind of things, and more outgoing press pressures. I started out as a secretary in the house. That's no longer an office. Spent a year there, 2 years as second vice, 2 years as first vice. And it really was a decision whether I should move on to speaker, but made that decision. It was called, but I did. And in the middle of that was when I got sick the first time. And it took me that, even though I came back and went full time, did my thing, it took enough out of me that I thought it was not, would not be fair to the academy and the profession to move on to a pleasant position. But I thought about it for a while and thought that probably the best thing that the leaders could do, once they've reached what they feel is the pinnacle of what they want to do, then it's time to bring that experience back to the constituent chapter level. And many people have done a much better job of that than I have. Betty Goodwin down in Florida has done a great job of that. Sue Reich over in North Carolina is just fantastic bringing people along. Because if you really are in the know and you really know what you're doing, you know that people who teach you will keep your profession going. So there are a lot of people who go, with MPAs, do a fine job. And I think they want to come from down to it. They say, well, who saved your profession? Who did the most for it? I believe it's the PAs who are in clinics and hospitals and, they're doing that daily work. You may never see them in confidence. It's their reputation, how they take care of patients. They kept the profession going. But there are other people who need to be doing what they do, legislatively, et cetera, on the national level. And I think that's just as important.
Anything else you want to add? What years were you second vice?
I was secretary from 95 to 96, and then every 2 years after that until speaker 2002-2003. That was a rip. I would have done that job. I would have stayed, I think, but there's always time for the next person to come in and really fresh ideas and still cancel. Couldn't have asked for a better guy.
Other interviewers would like to add any other questions for him?
Tom, what do you think the greatest accomplishment that's been made in the PA profession since our inception? Or what's one thing that you're most proud of as a profession?
I think probably, again, recognition without advertisement. we all graduate from school. We go out into the clinics and the hospitals, do our thing day in and day out. Some people even are working only overtime with double shifts, moving into new niches here and there. And it's all without advertisement. People do such a great job of being with PA that, PAs, as your profession has flourished without a big PR push. Now, there's been some of us who are not away. I sat on the board the first time back in 1991. We really thought at that time that we should do more in the way of advertising. I think, I'm not sure how many PAs there were, but the surgical PAs were just sort of getting organized and growing by leaps and bounds. They felt that we needed more advertising as well. If you look at how the AMA does things and how even in Pennsylvania they do things, the groups have sort of separate agendas and sort of can congeal all that into one agenda is hard to do. Peonies have been able to move into almost, I can't think of a specialty that doesn't really have a PA, and that comes from this mentality that we all were going to use them in primary care. But now, most specialties, I know the ones that I've been familiar with, don't know what to do about it. I think there might be, along with that growth, there might be some changes in utilization should be looked at, and maybe even mission and state down the road about what it is we really are and what we're doing. It's going to take more than just a name change, because I think the competition is good for it. I don't know if you want this on tape or not, but my philosophy is that we've awakened the sleeping giants for years. Probably the biggest part of my career, there's practitioners and nurses sort of tolerated us. They they never grow. We don't want to be the handmaidens like the PAs, but the handmaidens. It's not the case anymore, at least not all over the country. When I speak for this area, I worked in an empire, an MPM, and that's transmitted in all facets of job placement, the community membership, everything. Worry that we're not paying enough attention to that. The last few months I worked over there, I heard several times, teasingly, English practitioners and nurses say, "Tom, you enjoy working for us. You really will." They would laugh about it. And I said, "Well, I'm so well to do now. I'll never have to worry about that." But, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I see what's going on. I think we awakened, at least aggravated the sleeping giant. We need to address it. Now, do we need to address that with advertisement?
Would you do it all again, Tom? Would you become a PA again?
Can I? I'd go back to it right now.
Any words for future PA students?
Just to grab hold and buckle up and